Let us pray. We ask our God that you would grant us supple hearts and minds. Help us to listen attentively to the way you stir us to think and feel. And to that end, we open our hearts and minds to you. Amen. Last week was a reading about John the Baptist. It came from Mark. Today, the reading is from John, the first chapter in two parts, verses 6 through 8 and 19 through 28. Again, this also deals with the subject of John the Baptist. So the reading is like this. It says, "There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world." And then it picks up again. "This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, 'Who are you?' He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, 'I am not the Messiah.' And they asked him, 'What then? Are you Elijah?' He said, 'I am not.' 'Are you the prophet?' He answered, 'No.' Then they said to him, 'Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?' He said, 'I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered him, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal." This took place in Bethany, across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. There ends the reading. We'll start with a statement. And the statement is, God is constantly moving us toward the fullest life each of us is capable of having. So to say it again, God is constantly moving you toward the fullest human life you are capable of having. That goes on all the time. To be a little more clear, a full human life is an internal reality. It is related to, but it is not the same as, what characterizes our outside, exterior life. A full human life is not a life with a lot of stuff, nor is it a life with no stuff. It's not about stuff at all. It's an interior reality. It's about congruence and integrity, and especially about conscious participation in our own life. So the statement is, again, God is constantly moving us toward constant participation in our own life so that we can have congruence and integrity. Okay. God moves us, second statement, God moves us toward this full human life by creating insights. Insights are the means through which God initiates and orchestrates changes in our inner life, and those changes allow us to inhabit our life more completely. So, for example, it is through insights that each of us becomes conscious that we're feeling something. You ever had the experience, you're in a project, you're doing something, whatever, and then this insight comes and tells you that you're frustrated, or you're excited, or you're angry, or you're depressed, or you're frightened. The experience has been there all along or for some time, but you don't know it because the insight hasn't informed you. But the insight informs you. It informs us about what we're feeling, about what we're thinking, and about what we're doing. And the result of that is that we stop being on automatic in the way we're interacting, and now we're conscious of being, let's say, anxious in the middle of a conversation or situation. The awareness allows us to participate in our own life in a more real way and actually allows us then to make choices about how to be in the situation. So to participate in our life is about having insights that inform us. Most of the things, the insights that come to us are in harmony with the image that we have of ourselves. So basically we take them and we use them and make choices about how to live. It's very common. So I encourage you to think about God as the creator of insight. Think about God that way. And if we do, we can understand how, by giving us insight, God orchestrates changes in our life all the time. A person doesn't even have to believe in God to be the recipient of these. This is how we're wired. This is how God interacts with us. Sometimes the insights we receive are not in harmony with our self-image, and they distress us, which makes them difficult to use. So for example, I'm talking to somebody and all of a sudden I become very aware of how anxious I am. It's hard to use anxiety in the middle of a conversation where my mind is telling me I should be friendly and outgoing and pleasing, and I'm aware of being anxious. So that happens to everybody. When that happens, we enter what Advent and Christmas are concerned about. Advent and Christmas are about how we are readied for change to occur when we are resistant to the change. Now, I know that that's a surprise. The stories we read at Christmas all have to do with God's initiating and or orchestrating changes in our life. The stories about John the Baptist, the stories about Mary and Joseph, the baby Jesus, the shepherds, the angels, the accounts that pivot around those characters, all of us are saying something about how God works change in us. And the issue they address is, how does change occur when we're resistant to it? So as the season of Christmas approaches and you hear these familiar traditional stories, see if you can keep in mind the fact that what they're actually trying to do is connect you to changes that God works inside you and the way in which God does that. They're not about the content of the story themselves. They're about what the content describes God is doing. We're in Advent. So let's talk a little bit about Advent specifically. And this will be like a summary of the previous two Sundays. When an insight distresses us and we cannot work with it, we find that we are impelled to respond to what is distressing us. I know you know about that. Everybody knows about that. When something comes to mind and it's distressing, you have no choice but to respond to it in some way. So if we use the language of the story and use the language of mythology, we would say when that occurs, John the Baptist enters your life. John the Baptist is the name in mythology for what we would describe as an urging or an urgency to respond to an insight that has distressed us. When you start to respond, in the old days, they would have told you John the Baptist showed up. We don't talk like that. But what we do is we feel drawn to immerse ourselves in the effort to find relief, and to find relief by thinking about how to approach our distressing insight differently. And that's John. John will be this thing, whatever, that encourages you to say, whoa, let's think about this for a minute. The influence of what John represents is toward having us use our minds to understand what troubles us. It's toward using our intelligence to unpack the insight that distresses us so we can see it in a way that allows us to use it. Have you ever found yourself having something distress you and then you notice you're trying to analyze it, think your way into it, think your way, feel your way into it, try to come to some terms with it? You ever done that? That's John. That's what John does. We analyze what troubles us as a way to come to a better understanding of it and be freed of being captured by the distress. There are many times in life when this effort, to feel and think our way into what troubles us is sufficient to produce a change in the way you relate to what you're facing, and it reduces or eliminates the distress you feel. That's a really good thing. That's a good thing. So the answer to the question, how does change occur when we're resistant to it? It happens through the appearance of this urgency to respond to being distressed, and are responding to it by thinking, feeling our way into what distresses us. Sometimes we're too distressed to analyze and understand anything. We find ourselves drawn into activities that distract us. All of us do this. I'm a master at it. I have several PhDs in distraction. I imagine you have about as many as I do. You're really distressed, and what you do is you find anything to distract yourself. I suggest that by and large, these are never things we choose. These are actually things we're drawn into. We're pressed into them, or we're pushed into them. But once again, an insight will come and tell you, oh yeah, I'm distracting myself from something. Eventually that will come. And that urgency to respond, which we call John the Baptist, comes again. So we have an urging to use our mind to understand our distractions. You know, you're standing at the counter and you're about to buy something and you know you don't need it, but you feel you have to have it because otherwise you're going to die. You know that feeling? Everybody knows that feeling? Okay. And there's a little voice that goes off in your head. Oh, what are you doing? You don't need to do that. No, you don't need to do that. Back and forth, back and forth. John the Baptist tried to get you to think into what you're doing. John urges us to unpack our distractions, to see if doing so can help us learn about the distress that necessitates the distraction. It is possible, actually, to do that. You know, you're all set to buy something, and then you realize, oh yeah, I had a conversation yesterday with my spouse, children, whatever, and they said something mean, and I feel really bad, and I think this will help me feel better. Knowing that, you may buy it because you think you deserve it, or you may buy it because you think you can live without it. That's John the Baptist. This actually works. relief comes. Now, this is the third Sunday in Advent, and this is where it gets a little darker, because what we've been talking about is change that comes to us as a result of effort we make in response to the urgency to find relief. And the point of the third Sunday in Advent is, however, that not everything that happens inside us can be cleared up, solved, or resolved by our effort. Can't do it. Some things are beyond us because we do not have access to the feelings or understandings that allow us to move more deeply into them. The urging that is John to be thoughtful is sometimes not enough. That's a very difficult journey to make. Not a happy time to realize that you are in possession of a feeling that possesses you, and you cannot figure your way through it or out of it. I think what Advent's trying to say to us is that's actually a legitimate place on the journey. That's a valid place. John's urging is necessary. It is a, quote, voice crying out in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord. In other words, it's through the urging that is John that we come to understand that sometimes something other than and different from our own effort is needed if what we are facing is to be resolved. The urging that is John does not bring any failure. Oops. Hold on. See, you'd never want to have Windows 8 on your machine. Yes, there it is. No, I lost it again. Hold on. I found it. Always have a manuscript because these things happen, you know, and then you're toast. The urging that is John does not bring any resolution. In other words, it fails. Can we use that word? But by failing, it straightens out our thinking about what we can do on our own and what we cannot do on our own. And it thereby makes us ready to receive whatever more there is. Do you know how you try to resolve something and you can't, then you kind of resolve something and you can't, and you try to resolve it and you can't, on and on and on for days or weeks or months or years? You know, at some point in time, the failure of that effort dawns on us, and as that failure sinks in, we actually are made ready to receive something else. This appears in the text in a peculiar way. There's a statement made about John. He came as a witness to the light. He himself is not the light, but he came to testify to the true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. So something else will come to you, and it will enlighten and illuminate what is now in darkness. I think the best way to summarize the third Sunday of Advent is to say it is concerned with our grasping our own inability to modify our own internal situation. Everywhere in our culture, you will hear people tell you, you just have to try harder. Okay, follow it. Right up until you can't. And when the insight dawns that you actually don't know what to do, it will dawn on you that something else is needed. We need to learn something and we don't know experientially or conceptually what that is or how that's going to be. A and that's a good place to stay for a while. There's another Sunday in Advent which will address this situation more directly, but for now and for a time, we need to engage the truth that we are sometimes not able to modify our own interior life. It's a simple thing as an idea to grasp, but it's actually not that easy to grasp emotionally. It's really hard to acknowledge that you cannot penetrate a situation and resolve it. And Advent says that's a legitimate place to be, and it's a place to hang out for a while. We'll be quiet.